On this episode, we discuss Little Italy.
Good thing I watched this movie. I almost forgot about it.
Okay. Hey everyone, welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Oh, hey guys, I'm Stuart Wellington.
And hey, it's Elliot Kalin. I was going to be real big, and then Stuart came in kind of quiet and contemplative.
Kind of low.
That's good improv. You're matching his energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got it. They call me the energy matcher.
Uh-huh. Is that the improv character we're going to start doing a scene around?
Yeah. He's the guy who matches whatever energy he's around. But uh-oh, that means... If you lock him in a room with, like, I don't know, Josh Gad, he is going to be off the walls.
But then, oh no!
You put him in a room with who's real low energy, like
Stephen
Billie
Wright.
Eilish. Yeah, Stephen Wright. You put him
Stephen
with
Wright,
Stephen Wright
and Billie Eilish.
They're finally collaborating.
Yeah.
So hey guys, this is a podcast where we watch a bad movie and then we talk about it.
Uh-huh.
And we did a contest a while back.
Yep.
We're finally
a contest.
Getting to the winners.
Yep, that's the right verb. We did a contest.
And
so, Dan, yeah. Did we enter the contest?
No, okay. We held a contest.
Oh, okay.
For designers to design new merch for us.
It was a contest, just to put it into context for the listeners.
Contest.
It's a similar to, like, if you were to go to, say, an Italian cultural festival, and there was a contest as to who makes the best pizza. We did something like that, but instead of pizza, it was about podcast-related merchandise.
Yeah. And,
thank you for that context. It was very useful. Mm-hmm. And the prize for the contest was you get to pick the movie we're going to watch and talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Let me explain the part of the contest that is most applicable to the information we need to provide to the listener.
Dan's just deleting emails right now.
No, I'm trying to find. So the guy who selected this movie gave us a little information about how to.
And Dan, I assume as a podcasting professional, you have that queued up ahead of time.
I did have it queued up, but then he has a. Unusual last name that I did ask him how to pronounce, and I was trying to find the email where he explained that. But okay. I have it. His name is Scott Yakushin, and he picked a movie called Little Italy.
Little Italy.
Mm-hmm. Or as my grandmother would pronounce it, Little Italy.
I'm over-pronouncing it because, as Audrey pointed out, not since The Rural Juror has a movie name been hard to pronounce if you kind of do it quickly, so although everyone in the movie pronounces it, they do like sort of a Little Italy. So
yes, I mean there's a wide variety of Italian accents in this movie.
From
ooh, boy.
Real to comically overdone.
To comically underdone. Like this is, we'll talk about it, but this is maybe considering it's a movie about Little Italy with it, two families that own pizzerias.
Uh-huh. Two families
it's
united,
like,
in pizza, equal in esteem.
It's maybe the least Italian movie I've ever seen. Like, The Irishman felt more Italian than this movie.
I mean, not every Italian person has, like, a comic opera accent, Elliot.
It's called Little Italy. They own pizza places. Come on.
I mean, no matter what Andrea Martin will have you believe, they don't all, they aren't like,
well, no,
hey, it's a Mia.
And Andrea Martin, man. What a treasure.
I mean, she's great. She's vastly overplaying this role. But we'll...
I would say the opposite. I think partly because it makes sense that this is the Little Italy of Toronto, which is probably a little bit less over the top than the Little Italy I'm used to, which is the tri-state area of the United States, Little Italy, you know, downtown Manhattan or New Jersey, where everyone is trying to outdo themselves and how crazily cartoonish they can sound in real life.
Yes, but I want to read what Scott had to say about this movie. He said, "Howdy do, floppers. I first came across this movie when me and my partner were holed up in a hotel one frigid Chicago night. scrolling through the Still in Theater section, we were baffled to find Little Italy, a film that we were both fairly certain was not still in theaters, nor had it ever been in any theater. Was the television receiving broadcast from another dimension? One where Hayden Christensen had jet black hair? We decided to shell out the sensible $18.95, I don't know about that, and quickly discovered that the movie did come from an alternate universe of sorts, a world of ketchup potato chips and public health care known as Canada.
Yep.
As we watched, I realized that this brand of tomato sauce flecked with maple syrup cinema would be perfect fodder for three Frank D'Angelo devotees such as yourselves. Mm-hmm. Although, as far as I know, the Sicilian vampire fails to make a cameo appearance. I sure hope you guys enjoy this movie from the Great White North, or at the very least, I hope it provides an opportunity for Elliot to make a "That's Amore, eh?" pun at some point in the podcast. And I did want to say, I forgot to mention the particular piece of merch that Scott Yakison did for us. It's the poster of us all sort of Big Daddy Roth style watching a movie on a couch.
Oh, cool, yeah. Well, I'm just going to get this started right away, guys. This contest has yielded some delicious fruits like tomatoes. So we are going to jump directly into Little Italy. And, you know, just right off the bat, guys, I love it when a movie opens with the, like, central theme of what the movie's about. It's like in, 5 Million Miles to Graceland, the movie about battling Elvises.
Yeah, 5 Million Miles to Graceland. It takes place on Venus.
where the movie opens with...
It's about aliens who love Elvis. The Emir coming to Earth. He loves Elvis.
I mean, Venusians aren't necessarily aliens if they're on Venus, but we'll get to that later. But that movie opens with, you know, it's a movie about two battling Elvises, so the movie opens with two CGI scorpions battling in the desert. And I feel like this movie opens with a eggplant and a tomato exploding in an Italian man's face, which kind of shows how, like, two great Italian flavors are more delicious when put together.
And now, do you think the eggplant, as with emojis, represents the male penis and the tomato represents the female genitalia?
Certainly, that is... It is just an introduction to exactly how horny this movie is, which is off the charts.
Very. Before we get into the plot,
you're like,
actually,
how many Röntgens of horniness does this movie have? Well, the meter says 3.5 or whatever. That's as high as the meter goes.
The meter only goes that high. It's going to take, you're going to have to get a West German robot to try to defuse this, the horniness in this one.
The horniness killed the robot already.
Oh, no. I want to mention this movie comes from the Petrie Canadian-American filmmaking dynasty.
It is a Petri dish of various flavors.
Yeah, it's you don't shouldn't eat out of a Petri dish, Stuart. It's not a cooking
what
utensil.
What if it's penicillin?
Don't eat you don't eat penicillin just out of a dish. Like,
oh no. Oh boy!
Why? I don't have because what? It used a spoon, a fork.
No, yeah. So penicillin was discovered when Dr. Jonas Salk saw some yummy-looking mold in his petri dish and just scooped it up with his bare claws and just shoveled it into his mouth. And he said, "Oh, I don't have polio anymore." Yeah. So, okay. This was directed by Donald Petrie, who also directed Mystic Pizza and Grumpy Old Men. And in my research, I found his dad.
Congeniality.
What?
I think also Miss Congeniality.
Miss Congeniality. His dad directed A Raisin in the Sun and Ford Apache the Bronx. His brother, that's his dad, Daniel Petrie. His brother, Daniel Petrie Jr., wrote Beverly Hills Cop and Turner and Hooch. His mother, Dorothea Petrie, was a film producer. And his sister, Mary Petrie, is an actress, and she was in The Hidden. And his other sister, June Petrie, is a movie producer. So this is a major movie family dynasty that I had never heard of, even though they apparently received an AFI award for being a family that makes movies, all of them.
Yeah, that sounds great. That's some excellent background, Elliot. So the movie opens on two little kids just hanging out, being best friends.
Now,
we're introduced to Leo and Nikki. Yes, Dan?
I know I'm jumping in here, but I just want to say these two little kids will grow up to be Emma Roberts and Hayden Christensen.
Uh-huh, yep.
Hayden Christensen, who is a full decade older than Emma Roberts, but to be about the same age at the time that they're children.
That's part of the problem with the entertainment industry, where they've kind of normalized the idea, Dan, that you know, these much older men are roughly the same age as younger women. So when you bump into 20-year-old couples where they're both 20 years old, you're like, who's this little boy?
Yes, that is an issue,
Ma'am,
Stuart,
you brought your son to the pizzeria?
I feel like while pairing an older man with a younger woman in movies is a very real issue, this is a slightly different issue, which is trying to make us believe that Hayden Christensen and Emma Roberts are the same age. That is a...
Well, it's like watching Hobbs and Shaw, a movie that posits that Jason Statham and the amazing actress whose name has slipped out of my head, who plays his sister.
Meryl Streep?
Yes, I think it is Meryl Streep, Elliot. Yeah. I'm just going to go out on a limb and guess that.
Is it Rebecca Ferguson?
It is not Rebecca Ferguson.
Una O'Connor?
Nope. Nope, let's not just go down a list of actress names.
Betty Davis?
I've already made my guess. I already said Meryl Streep.
Okay.
But they suggest that these two are like basically exactly the same age. And I'm like, well, Jason Statham's 50, and IMDb does not list this actress's age, but I'm assuming it's not 50.
It's Vanessa Kirby, by the way.
She was also in a Mission Impossible movie,
which is probably why I was confusing.
I think, anyway. Dan, the bigger issue
for
me...
Yeah, you get partial credit, I guess.
Yeah.
The bigger issue, when you just said Mission Impossible, as if that was her name.
No.
the way an old person...
You were not paying attention to what happened.
I think, Dan, the issue for me was less that Hayden Christensen is clearly much older than her, and more the fact that we're supposed to believe the two of them are Italian, which...
Well, Hayden Christensen, I looked up... He actually has some Italian in his background. Emma Roberts has none, and it shows.
Well, I mean, she is the daughter of Eric Roberts, who was in Pope of Greenwich Village and at least one Batman movie.
I guess he plays a lot of Italian people, so...
And Hayden Christensen, as you can tell from his name, is the son of Jesus Christ, who many Italians worship. So, I guess it checks out.
That just reminded me about how in Batman Begins, Tom Wilkinson has the best Italian accent as a mob boss. Oh, man, that rules. Okay. So, we're introduced to these two kids. They're best friends. There's also definitely some romantic interest. Nikki clearly has a crush on Leo. And both of their parents, both of their fathers, own a pizzeria, the best pizzeria in all of Little Italy, Toronto, called Pizza Napoli. And one thing, before we get further into the plot, I just want to say I love how this movie is very unabashedly set in Toronto.
Yes.
Like, there are Canadian flags everywhere. There's Air Canada product placement. That's great. So, flash forward. Nikki is now all grown up. In culinary school in London. Did I miss a fucking super important point, Elliot?
Yes, you did. The dads are prepping for the big pizza contest.
That doesn't fucking matter at this point. We'll get to it in a second.
Because they're... All right. And also, I would say, Andre Martin as the grandmother, she tells Nikki, never squeeze the love out of a man's heart. You're squeezing those tomatoes. You're squeezing them until there's none left in them, but never squeeze a man's heart that way.
Yeah. All right. I like the second one because it's a funny quote, but I have to agree with Stuart that there was no reason to backtrack for a
the whole movie is about this stupid pizza contest.
But later on,
Elliot was hoping that I would mention the pizza contest, but not mention that there's going to be results, so that people are sitting on the edge of their seat for the rest of my fucking
yes,
plot summary.
Thank you,
so
exactly. I'm trying to build some suspense for the audience.
Obviously, they're going to win because they're the best, but there's a whole movie, so I don't know what's going to happen. Nikki is now in London. She's working for Jane Seymour, who is this like evil Gordon Ramsay type chef character. And obviously it's Jane Seymour. She's great.
Oh, wait. I had a question for you, Dan, in this one. So Nikki says something about, I was actually learning to cook, like 4 Michelin stars cook. I thought Michelin stars only went up to 3.
Yes, I think that... was true. I think maybe recently they added another Michelin star. Let me look it up.
I see. Okay. Well, anyway, I just figured you'd know that better than me because you're like Mr. Cook. You're like, hey, I gotta make a pizza pie in my house.
Maybe she's showing like a cultural tendency for hyperbole, Elliot.
Oh, okay. I believe that. Okay.
So, and now we introduce like one of the major challenges of the movie. Because Jane Seymour offers, once again, Jane Seymour's playing a character. It's not Jane Seymour, the actress. She offers Nikki the opportunity to compete to write a menu for her brand new hot restaurant. The only problem is she has to get this menu done, and then she has to change her student visa to a work visa. So she's going to have to go back to Toronto for a brief time, only to return to London. So she's going to have to go back and see her family. And why is that a problem, Elliot?
That's a problem because there's some bad blood going, an unfinished business between her family and Leo.
Could this be related to that pizza contest you were so fucking hot for?
Yeah, maybe it's entirely about the pizza contest. No, but you're right, Stuart. Mentioning the exploding eggplant was much more on point than the pizza contest that is literally the pivotal thing in the entire movie.
I mean, it's not like we
exploding vegetables
to the
was
goddamn
a,
pizza.
It
contest.
Was a carefully crafted joke that I spent the whole time in the cab coming up with, and I was like, "Which angle should I go with?"
Also, I confirmed that you're correct that there's still only 3 Michelin stars you can get.
So maybe she's saying like, "I'm going to be so good they'll give me a 4th star," but it comes off as it's so casually said that I was like, "Does the movie not know how many stars? Did they not do that amount of research?"
Mm-hmm. Now this introduces that the families are now at war. Their fathers, Vince and Sal, have separated, and they have opened up their own separate pizza parlors.
How do they show us visually that the dads are older than they were in the old scenes?
They don't have beards anymore, is that it?
One of them has shaved his mustache, and I was like, no, when you get older, you're supposed to grow a beard. He looks younger.
Wait. Yeah, I guess you're right. You do look younger when you don't have facial hair. Unless you're Lance Henriksen. I bet Lance Henriksen, if he grows a beard, you're like, who's this 20-year-old stud?
Yeah, probably. That's because he covers up all those pumpkin head scars, yeah.
Yeah, that's how he got them.
Yeah.
We're also reintroduced to Leo, at this point now played by Hayden Christensen. He's used to playing a character who was earlier introduced as a young boy and is now a grown-up man. Hayden Christensen,
we're gonna need to have a grown-up play character who was once a young person, once a kid. Get me Hayden Christensen.
Yeah, we all remember young Shattered Glass.
Yeah, where he's like a little reporter.
He's a boy reporter like Tintin.
So
yeah. Does Tintin just make stuff up? Is that what Tintin is about?
Yeah, that's why all those old Tintin comics were kind of racist, because Tintin himself was kind of racist. That's the sad part. That's the sad thing that they never tell you.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So the real issue was not the making the fantabulizing. It was the racism.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at this point, Leo has been introduced, played by Hayden Christensen. You're probably wondering, yes, he does at some points have longer spiky hair and at other points have shorter flat hair. I don't know why this is. It could be because he's wearing a scooter helmet because he rides a scooter. So he's a real Casanova. All the ladies love him. We're also introduced to some additional side characters that work in the pizzerias. Both pizzerias employ a character of Asian descent. And yes, you're wondering, yes, they're also kind of racist toward those characters.
With specifically the Indian subcontinent, because there's another Asian character who's of Chinese ethnicity later.
And this movie makes some jokes that, like, even if, I feel like if Hank Azaria was watching, he'd be like, woof, I'm off the hook now.
Yeah. Well, especially because the Chinese guy is also gay, and that is shown by him later on harassing Hayden Christensen a little bit. I mean, they're buddies, so like Hayden Christensen seems cool with it, but
it took that as playful joshing. Hayden Christensen does get harassed by that policewoman later on in a scene I found genuinely very disturbing and uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we'll get to that.
We'll get to it.
The part where she is openly groping him in front of everybody and describing his penis and stuff like that. Like, that's not funny.
It was horrifying, and it went on forever. The thing was, it came right after a scene that was also horrifyingly sexual, because this movie is, as I mentioned, horny in scary ways.
I will say, like, I was uncomfortable with that scene, because if it was a woman, it would be totally unacceptable. The movie thinks it can get away with it because it's a woman groping a guy.
That scene exists with a woman and a man. It's from Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. Like, that's how terrifying it is.
But I have to admit that, like, if it was the woman, the actress, I found very funny, even while thinking, like, this should not be.
Yeah, I mean, she didn't write the scene, probably.
I'm guessing there's a lot of improv in that scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But okay, so the dads, they have two competing pizza places because they broke up for unknown reasons after the pizza contest.
And by breaking up, both of them are suffering financially and in some ways with their own familial relationships. We learn that the wives, played by Alyssa Milano, who actually brings a certain gravitas to this movie. I kind of like her performance. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember the actress who plays Vince's wife, but they're still friends. They're like,
yeah, look it up.
They're secretly colluding and like trying to find ways to get their idiot husbands to make amends.
Hiding wine glasses in potted plants so they can talk to each other.
Love it, love it.
That looks like I believe that's Linda Cash, who plays that role, and she's a Second City alum. She's been in a bunch of TV shows.
Oh, wow.
And we also, this is another plot line that will develop over the course of the movie. We also learn that the grandparents, Nono and Nona, right? That's what they call grandparents.
Nona, yes. Played Nona by is Danny. Grandma, and yep. Nono is grandpa because grandpas love that song that goes no, 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 no,
final film role.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, wow. he died after making this movie. And Danny Aiello has never seemed less Italian to me than in this movie.
Yeah, well, because they pair him with Andrea Martin, who's like... Yeah, it's almost like people are like, no, this is actually a stage performance. There's no cameras here. So it turns out that they're also secretly having an affair that will develop over time. An affair is in like an actual romance. They're not married to anyone else.
Nona did promise her dead husband she would never marry again, which is a real hurdle to get over.
And a shitty thing for, I don't know whether the husband demanded it or whether she...
I think more that she vowed.
She, okay. You know?
Thanks for saying no, by the way. So we also find out that because of those financial problems, Leo can't just work at his family's pizzeria. He also works at the bar that he lives above. That's right, Luigi's Bar.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about Luigi.
So Luigi is a Chinese man who comedically is called Luigi and wears Italians. He has like an affected Italian accent. He wears a lot of chains. I think he has a belt that says Italian on it. And he runs this like fun dive bar. So fun, in fact, that at one point the entire bar just goes outside to play a soccer game and pours shots in each other's mouth with no money being exchanged.
Yeah.
Was that the part, Stuart, where you were watching it and you were going, no?
Yeah. Yeah, I was like flipping the table over and tearing out my hair, and Charlene's like, it's just a movie. And I'm like, it feels so real. Leo goes to work. Nikki arrives from London. She is picked up by her friends. Her friends take her. She's like, I can't see my parents yet. I need a drink. So they all go out to Luigi's Bar. That's the local bar. Mm-hmm. And of course, they run into Leo, who is, as we at this point understand, very hot. Every mm-hmm. woman wants him. Every man wants him. He's amazing.
He's hotter than a fresh slice of pizza right out of the oven.
And they are immediately making super horny flirtation. He pulls a soccer ball out, and you're like, what are they going to do with this soccer ball? Well, the thing is that Leo and Nikki have this long history of playing soccer. So, of course, you know, they go outside in the rain. They get all super wet, do a bunch of shots. Yeah. And then we have this romantic scene of Leo kicking soccer balls at Nikki over and over.
It is pouring outside, by the way.
Oh, yeah. And it's like a monsoon in Toronto.
And I, you know, maybe I would believe that these two flirtatious, like, competitive characters would go out and do this in the pouring rain, but uh-huh. there's a huge crowd out there watching them, too, many without umbrellas, and I found that crazy. Also, it's clearly AstroTurf, based on the way the water is pooling beneath them.
Oh, wow. Wow. Film flubs. Write that one in.
Oh, public park burn from Dan McCoy. Mm-hmm.
So, of course, at this point, you know, they have this great scene, super romantic. They both get wasted. But, of course, before they can kiss, Nikki passes out drunk in the rain on Leo's lap. Flash forward to the next morning.
Flash forward to the next morning. She's dead. He left her there. Wow. With her mouth open, she drowned.
She, yeah, on that pool, in a pool of water on AstroTurf. So she wakes up naked in a strange bed. And then, of course, we see that Luigi is pulling on his undershorts. He makes her briefly believe that they had slept together. And then he's like, no, just kidding. And then Leo comes in and does the same thing. And I'm like, what the fuck, dudes? Like, it's not funny to, like, to infer that you sexually assaulted somebody. And then there's a lot of, like, close talking in this bedroom that also amplifies that, like, threat of sexual violence. It's really weird to me. Yeah, so that I was kind of put off, so I don't actually remember what happened at this point.
Well, they're kind of talking to each other about, she thinks they slept together, and he goes, no, no, you didn't. I just put you to bed in your dress, and I don't know what happened after that. And they talk to each other.
He took the clothes off, but only because, like, she was soaking wet from the fucking monsoon.
He said she took them off, and
yeah,
then
he says I put you into bed clothed. What happened after that, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
So she probably took them off in the middle of the night. But they talk to each other. It's one of those conversations you see in a romantic comedy where it's like, we can't be together. We're from two different worlds. Like, we just don't have enough in common. And it's like, you're from the same world. Like, your dads were in business together. You're both in the same business. Like, come on, guys.
Yeah, I mean, she's going places, and he's stuck in Little Italy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's true. I guess that's it. But I guess I wish they had said that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as addressed later on in the movie, it's called Little Italy because it never changes. Something I don't quite understand, but I think it's applicable.
It reminded me of the line in the movie Heist when Danny DeVito goes, of course you need money. Everybody needs it. That's why they call it money. And it's like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, it sounds like it makes sense, which is like, that's why they call it Little Italy, because nothing ever changes. It's like, wait, so are you saying little things don't change or Italy doesn't change? Because little things often change. They grow into bigger things. Children, small cats, small elephants.
Hayden Christensen.
Yeah, Hayden Christensen, exactly. Whereas Italy has also seen a number of changes over its period from the kind of separate disputed states that were the case for, well, let's go back all the way to the ancient era of Rome, to the different occupied states of the 18th and early 19th centuries, to the unified Italy that we know today, which itself went through the changes of the fascist governments and current democratic governments. So I would say to you, Emma Roberts, a.k.a. Nikki Angioli, Italy has changed quite a bit. And if you're not okay with accepting that, then maybe you shouldn't be Italian. Oh, you're not Italian, Emma Roberts? I'm so sorry. I apologize. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, Little Italy is a little bit like a teenager that transforms into a car and then transforms back into a teenager. And both times you're like, this is kind of sexy.
Wait, are you talking about the Wraith?
I was talking about Turbo Teen. But So we get some stuff where the two pizzerias are, the two owners of the pizzerias are playing pranks on each other. And by pranks, I mean, at one point, I guess they had called the IRS or the Canadian equivalent, claiming the other performed tax evasion.
I think it's called the IRA.
Oh,
because Canadians say A sometimes at the end of their sentences.
Yeah. I mean, that would be funny, except for it evokes Irish terrorism, Elliot. So.
Oh, you're right.
Wow,
Dan's
making a political stand on this podcast.
Stand against terrorism, sure.
Wow, that's very brave of you, Dan.
Yeah.
Should we take a moment to just think about it? Or?
No, we
can
move on.
Dan, I notice you've got a number of different colored ribbons on your jacket. Can you tell us about some of those? The audience can't see them. It's weird that you would wear them for a podcast recording, but just tell us what they stand for.
I just like ribbons, but I like looking like a present.
Mm-hmm. Or like an ultimate warrior.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that the ultimate present? The ultimate warrior?
Yeah.
But what's this current prank?
The current prank is that Sal has switched out. He has spiked Vince's oregano stash with a different kind of stash entirely. That's right. He swaps out the oregano with marijuana, a thing that looks very similar but smells fairly different.
Well, and also this movie was clearly made by someone who has never smoked or eaten marijuana, because the reaction is like people are dancing on tables and going
and
nuts.
And getting super horny.
Yeah.
This old lady is dancing on a table, and she's super turned on by the waiter.
And then she drags Joji up on this table, and he is also horny. But I think he was horny before. I don't think he had any pizza at all.
Elliot, let me say a thing.
Okay.
Sorry, Dan. Stuart and I are having a conversation here, but I know you need to say your thing. So
well,
go
you
ahead.
Goddamn people cover me up all the time. Jesus. Elliot,
like
I know
up,
that
sauce with some delicious mozzarella.
I know that you do not partake of the marijuana, but it will often make you a little horny. What it will not do is make you want to dance. It is well known for making you want to lie on the couch and watch television.
That's what I'm more used to. When I'm around people and they're smoking marijuana, usually they fall asleep.
Yes.
So, or they start talking about nonsense that I don't need to know about, and I get out of there and I go, save it for your podcast, buddy. And then they have a podcast called Dan in High Life, and it's where Dan just gets high and talks about whatever.
Yeah.
So
that actually sounds pretty good. Why didn't you, do that,
you should do that
10 years ago?
Sure, okay. I mean, I need a more regular supplier of weed to do a whole podcast. But
all right, I'll get it for you. So in researching this movie, I noticed that on the IMDb trivia, they mentioned that even this is so that we know the movie is not out of date. Even though marijuana use was legalized in Canada 10 months after this movie was released, you would still need to buy that pot-infused pizza from a government store. So the scene still works, everybody.
Yeah,
don't,
I mean, I
don't
write I also
into
don't
the makers of Little Italy and say this it's out of date and it dates the movie. It still works.
I mean, I assumed if it was, even if it was legal, you can't spike somebody's stuff with a drug,
it's,
right?
It's still illegal to give drugs to somebody without their knowledge. Yes. Yeah. No matter how legal a drug is, I think that's always illegal.
Okay, so we're also introduced to, there's a slight, this really isn't a complication, I just want to bring attention to a new character, Lisa the flight attendant, who shows up mainly to make it seem like Emma Roberts is not attractive, as she is a paramour of Leo's, but obviously she doesn't matter to him.
And she and never appears
once
in the movie
again. Yeah, she never appears again. This is exclusively to restate that Leo is hot and also to suggest that airplanes may play a part later on in the movie. But we'll get to that.
Now, and so I don't want to gloss over the scene that we mentioned before. After the pizza is spiked is where we get the moment where a lady cop is basically groping Leo. She's searching his body for, I don't know, a weapon? I don't understand. And she's just grabbing him everywhere and commenting on it. And again, the purpose of this is to remind the audience that Leo is supposed to be some hunk of man.
But, and it's gross and super uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's really good. She's literally like squeezing his butt and talking about how hard it is to everybody. Mm-hmm. It's this crowd of people that are watching. And I was like, ugh, this is like something out of like the 120 Days of Sodom. Like, it's so horrifying to me that the amount of powerlessness that he has in that moment and that he's on display while it's happening. It's like, It made me think that this was like a you know the movie White Man's Burden, where they're like, what if white people were like black people? It was like, this is out of some movie where they're like, what if men were treated the way men treat women? I think it would go like this. It feels wrong in this movie, I guess is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. But I think it also, like, it's another moment where the just general feeling of horniness bleeds into the main narrative here.
I mean, Toronto has one horniest city in Canada for, I think, 70 years running.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but I think what is it?
Montreal has got to be the horniest.
Well, but Montreal doesn't consider itself Canadian. Let's not stick our feet in that landmine, okay, Dan?
Although, the place where Corner Gas happens is pretty horny, but oh man.
Guys, you know what? I think Canada might be having sex.
Oh, wow.
Canadians, write in. Tell us. Are you?
Are you doing it? This is just write in.
I think you guys are opening a can of worms you do not want.
Just write to the Flophouse care of Real Life Mountie and just tell us, are you doing it? Canada, we want to know.
So we get some more comedic scenes. We get a scene where the two fathers, Sal and Vince, continue their tradition of having this, like, kind of celebrity roast battle where they go to Luigi's and make fun of each other until one of them gets mad and stands up. We have a scene where Nono and Nona are sneaking around and have to meet up at a Starbucks because nobody will see them there. And then they both have, what, like a macchiato or whatever for the first time, and they become addicts.
It's such a weird moment where they're both kind of orgasming over how good they think the coffee at Starbucks is. It was a strange moment in the movie.
And then there's like a garden party where like Nikki's friend is hosting, and they're trying to continue. Nikki's mother, played once again by Alyssa Milano, who's great, is trying to set Nikki up with a husband, because here's the thing. Nikki knows that she is not planning on staying in Toronto. She's just there to get her work visa, and then she's going back to London. I'm not going to say that she is as big of a coward as the boyfriend in Midsommar, But I feel like if she had just come out and told these people that she is worried about making feel bad, we wouldn't have all these problems, right, guys?
Wait, making who feel bad?
Her parents. She doesn't want to tell her parents, and theoretically Leo.
Yeah.
But, you know, we all come to those moments where we want to spare people the heartbreak, but in turn, we're just kind of like, we're behaving cowardly, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Have we gotten to the point yet where they hang out and eat pizza?
We're about to go there. I just want to briefly mention the fellow Mark Anthony that they tried to set her up with, who visibly grabs his crotch and then starts sniffing her cast off high heeled shoe.
Yeah,
and he's also a mortician.
In this
movie of finally we've had a Flophouse movie that had bloops during the credits, but in the bloops they have him talking and he goes, you know, they're not just bodies, they're kind of my friends with benefits, you know, and it's like. They did not need to make this character as undateable as possible. Like it's like there are certain points in the movie where they're like, let's go way overboard and have a character that is so cartoony he becomes sinister.
I did laugh at that bloop though.
Do you think that they like had a collection of scenes, almost a triptych of scenes of her meeting three different guys that all had a fetish or a thing that she was not interested in, and they're like. Too much time. Combine them all into one guy who grabs his crotch, has a foot fetish, and also probably has necrophilia.
Recast the scene. Just get one dude. Have him do it all. Yeah, I think so.
I mean, they probably saw the actor and they're like, he is the entire package.
Yeah, I want to make it clear. Like, if you have a foot fetish, great. Just don't smell someone's cast off shoe without their consent.
Just ask someone's permission before you smell their shoe. That's totally, it's okay.
In no way am I passing judgment on a foot fetish. I feel like the movie is passing judgment on it.
The movie is implying that this, I mean, we shouldn't pass judgment on morticians either. Like, it's a necessary part of, you got to do something with dead bodies.
I don't think that's what we're passing judgment on.
I think that they're deliberately making his job unappealing to her.
Yes, the movie. It's not like when she hears the mortician, she's like, okay, cool. Like, she's turned off by that also.
Oh, I guess I'm assuming that the bloop is part of the canon, that he has friendly benefits with the bodies. That's what I'm assuming.
Now, as we know...
It's not canon, I guess. My mistake.
It's not it's in true. The film. Anything that happens during or after the closing credits is just apocryphal. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and you know...
It's like the Gnostic Gospels.
The Gnostic Little Italy, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just because Hayden Christensen's involved doesn't mean that there's some kind of extended universe.
So Leo and Nikki, their fathers are feuding, two different restaurants. They had an argument. They come from different worlds.
Uh-huh.
What are you going to do? Get together for a romantic pizza-making dinner, right?
Yeah. And, man, I love this. I love this date. You know, they're going to cook dinner together. She starts eating, and she's like, oh, this is so great. And he's like... He's like, don't fill up on the appetizers. And I'm like, what the fuck? Why wouldn't he call it antipasti or whatever the fuck? Like, who calls it appetizers?
I want to say, too, he has a...
Once again, I threw the table over. I had already righted it previously.
You just went, Maron, and started biting your knuckles. You're so mad.
He has a pizza oven in his apartment. With a big open fire, which I do not think is a thing that people have in their apartments.
It's probably not officially a zoning approved thing to have an open pizza oven in your second or third floor apartment. Yeah.
Yeah. And he is more interested in, you know, fancier pizza pies than the very traditional pizzas being sold by his father. Mm-hmm. And he puts figs on the pizza. And her mind
conflict.
Is fucking blown by this in a way anybody who's like a professional chef should not be like, wow, figs on a pizza.
No, but Dan, she tells him to put figs on the pizza.
No, she doesn't.
Yeah.
I was too busy. The thing is, guys, I can't decide because the whole time I was wondering, are they going to fuck on this pizza?
Well, Dan, you and I are going to have to go back and rewatch the movie. He's talking about the crust. He has a specific way he does the crust. And she says, put the figs on the pizza. That'll cut through the cheese. And so we're seeing that they are combining their talents and that they make the perfect pie. But you're right. He does have a rooftop garden of organic ingredients, and he dreams of opening his organic pizza place.
Which, by the way, that rooftop garden has... upwards of 16 or 17 like lamps on it, but they're like house lamps. They're like table lamps with lampshades and stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's a very like sitcom set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know whether he like set those up because he knew she was going to come up there. I don't know. Audrey was very much like, what if it rains? What's going on? Why is there any lamps?
Dan, and it never rains. Wait a minute. Soccer in the rain. Oh no.
Yeah, so the date goes pretty well. At one point, somebody says, "You're speaking my language," and then they do some sexy Italian dancing, mm-hmm. and then Nikki abruptly leaves. She says, "I need to leave, or else I'll stay." And he doesn't quite realize that she's talking about an issue larger than just that night. Meanwhile, Grandpa is faced with the prospect of not getting to actually sleep with Nona. So she says, "You got to put a ring on it." I think she even says, "Like Beyonce."
Yeah, they mentioned Beyonce, of course, a couple times in the movie, and with diminishing returns each time.
Oh no, no, I disagree. I love the last time when Andrew Martin goes, "I'm a Beyonce."
So of course he proposes, because, you know, what else is he gonna do, right? Like, he doesn't have that much going on.
Come on, what's he gonna do? Wrap a slice of pizza around his dick? No, he wants her.
Whoa! I guess it is a binary choice, Elliot.
It's true. If you're not married, you gotta wrap some pizza around your dick.
I'm just saying, he doesn't have a lot of options.
I've been
okay.
doing it for years.
So at this point, like, you know, our two characters kind of go off and speak with their parents and grandparents to get a little bit of knowledge. Grandpa's talking to Leo, and he imparts some very important bits of wisdom, like, love is like making a pizza. You learn from your mistakes. You got to be fearless and have fun. And then he also follows that with, you can take the girl out of Little Italy, but you can't take the Little Italy out of the girl. And a variety of sayings like that.
I wish they had then revealed that he was watching a soccer game over Leo's shoulder and not really paying close attention to the conversation.
He's like, the chances we didn't take, the love we didn't make, that kind of shit. So of course,
hey, he's like, hey, Leo, he who dies with the most toys still dies, you know? Life's a beach.
Yeah, it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
So of course, you don't have to be crazy to work at this pizzeria, but it helps.
Yep. So Leo delivers a late night pizza and a message for Nikki to be ready at dawn, where he shows up on a scooter to drive her around. As Charlene put it, they're in Little Italy, not Big Italy. Why are they riding on a scooter? So they wake up at dawn before everyone else is awake to go to, like, a street festival.
Yeah, an Italian, like, street festival.
But, like, they don't live that far from the they're in Little Italy.
No,
is this a different town over?
Yeah, but they're also just, like, tasting a bunch of... I don't know, like, I guess if you like the food that you make, you know, you might have fun going out to, a food festival. But I also was kind of watching it being like, I don't know, they got to eat this all the time. Like, why are they, like, going to...
They're like, finally, Italian food.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as we've experienced, Toronto is a city that has a lot of different culinary options. Mm-hmm. It's not just Italian food. So you'd think that they would sample a full cornucopia of different flavors. So, of course, in this montage, there is a moment where they're comparing novelty T-shirts that say mm-hmm. different Italian things. That's great. And then they, of course, buy those T-shirts because they're wearing
them
later.
Instantly. Yeah. They take their regular shirts they're wearing before, I assume they threw in the gutter, no longer needing them.
Yeah. Like, this shirt isn't Italian enough.
Now, here's the thing, Dan. Just admit, this is done like kind of like a flirty montage with mm-hmm. music, so you don't totally hear all the dialogue, but I have to assume that, as you were saying, they love this cuisine, and they're just like, hey, check out what this guy over here is doing with bread, tomato sauce, and cheese. No, 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 no. You got to come over here and see what this guy is doing with bread, tomato sauce, and cheese. Wait, look what I found. You'll never guess the combination. That's right, tomato sauce, bread, we threw some cheese in it. Hey, over here. No, wait, hold on. I got tomato sauce and cheese. Where's the bread? It's right underneath it. They just need to find all the different combinations, because that's basically what Italian street fairs are.
Wow.
Also, I want to say...
take that, Italian street fairs.
As I think I've mentioned before, Audrey, while being Filipino, grew up part of her time in an Italian household, and she was very upset. She's like, you don't buy a cannoli that's pre-filled. So that's a little tip for all you. Apparently, don't buy a cannoli that's pre-filled.
Yeah, I mean, I do, because I'm not going to fill it.
Well, you don't have to fill it. You buy it at a place that will fill it for you.
So wait, like, I buy the shell, and then I wait for the fucking cannoli man to ring the bell and drive his cart by. And I'm like, cannoli man. I run out with the shell. I run out with the shell, Dan. And he pulls out his nozzle, and he stuffs it right in my shell, and he fills it. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't have 17 cents. And he's like, this one is on a me. And I'm like, okay, but why are you speaking like that? And And then I run in and I devour my cannoli.
Stuart, you're not buying just the shell when you buy this cannoli. You are paying...
No, no, you're buying the experience.
The shell and the filling. They're just separate at the beginning.
Really?
They give combined. You the shell and the fill. You put your hand out and they put the shell in one hand. Yeah. They fill your hand with the filling. And yeah. then you got to mush them together. And that's why they call it cannoli, because it's like... Oh, cannoli! I got a mess on my hands here.
Is that why they got the idea for the what is that the McDLT where they package the hot shit separately from the
exactly.
hot shit?
Exactly, keeps the hot hot and the cold cold, and it just uses thrice the styrofoam of a normal package.
I guess now here's when in Rome, you know.
You reminded me of a line from earlier where they're at that garden party and. Uh-huh. Alyssa Milano, for some reason, is delivering gum and a cannoli to the dead so that he can say the line, leave the gum, take the cannoli. Womp, womp, wah. Godfather.
That's what that's from.
Okay. Gobsmacked.
Okay, so...
wait, but
you know,
what happens? They're having so much fun with the novelty t-shirts and the food. What happens to?
The only option, of course, is to blow up more vegetables on an old man's stoop. but they make it up to him by leaving him a nicely appointed basket filled with Italian treats. Mm-hmm. I know I shouldn't have said Italian. It kind of goes without saying. Everybody kind of knew what was going to... Okay. So instead, they go back to Leo's place to change shirts, and she's like, make some kind of a comment, and he's like, hey, it's getting harder by the minute, because he, you know, it's talking about his wiener. It's very horny.
Okay.
And of course, then they, you know, finally hook up, the moment we've been waiting for. Meanwhile, Grandma and Grandpa have also hooked up, and they've also gotten married.
No, engaged.
Engaged. Oh, engaged. Yeah, sure. So this is the moment where you're like, is this what happens when somebody decides to write an entire romantic comedy around a step-sibling porno?
Oh, yeah. Hey, I did not even think of that.
I didn't either, but that makes... Because the scene between the two of them, between Leo and Nikki, he's like, oh, my shirt's all wet. I'll throw it in the dryer. She's like, yeah, mine too, and takes her shirt off. And it's like, he just doesn't seem to get the message, and it makes more sense if there's a taboo being broken or something, because she's like, I'll take my pants off too. He's like, okay,
he's like,
all right.
He's like, a Jedi can't get married, you know?
Do the grandparents have sex at this point, or is that later?
I thought they were like rolling around in the bed. Like,
they're in a hotel, but
I thought they were like rolling around in the bed.
No, no, they're in a hotel.
Well, Danny Aiello apparently, at his age, is able to get it up twice.
They have just had sex, and then they are initiating the second round when we leave the scene. And she says to him the immortal line, take off your top this time, because like an old man, he wore his shirt the entire time they had sex the first time.
Yeah, his sports shirt? What is Matt Berry called in
sports
Tesla?
Shirt.
Sports vest or something? Whatever, it's hilarious. So, of course, at this point, we need to put a little bit of fire under our characters. Jane Seymour, once again,
like
playing a character.
Like a good pizza oven.
Yep, she FaceTimes Nikki to pressure her. She's like, she realizes, she sees that Nikki has like sex hair, and she's like, "Is there a penis more pressing than my menu?" And that's it's a great line. Leo shows up and she pushes him away. She's like, "This can't work." She needs, but once again, she doesn't address why it can't work. She just tries. She creates a fight. She creates a problem between the two of them. We also now learn the secret to Nona's sauce. What's that secret, Dan?
You put a couple of anchovies in there.
Put a
then
couple
you fish,
of anchovies.
Then you
in
fish
there.
Them out later. I don't know why you got to fish them out. Just cut those anchovies real small. They'll pretty much dissolve in the sauce. But
okay,
I guess
tell Nona how to do it, Dan. She's been doing this sauce for decades.
That's true.
No, you come in, not even Italian, and tell her how to do it right. How dare you? How much privilege do you have, Dan?
I guess
Dan's read the food lab, Elliot. He knows a thing or two.
Yeah, I'm Kenji Lopez Alt. No, I mean, like, maybe she just wants a touch of anchovy flavor, but then just use. You know, one anchovy, chop it up good.
Dan, again, wow, this is, you're just walking into her culture and telling her how to do it better. Like this.
Yeah,
is
he's
crazy.
Like, feast of seven fishes, how about just five?
Who needs so many fishes? You know what, I spent a week in Italy once, so I guess I'll open an Italian restaurant and put my swing on things. Come on, this is the way to do it. And what would you call your Italian restaurant, Dan? Like Dan Marino's?
Yeah, sure. Let's go.
It
with
sounds
that.
More like a steakhouse in Florida. But speaking of bad names for things, Hayden Christensen, Leo, talks about his dream of opening a pizzeria with fancy, all-natural, organic ingredients, and his name is Pizza Organica. And I gotta say, terrible name.
It's not. It does not roll off the tongue. It does tell you what they have there, which is pizza with human organs on it.
And harmonicas.
And harmonicas.
So at this point, Grandma and Grandpa are trying to finally break the news to their families.
Yeah.
So they organize a joint dinner.
A surprise joint dinner.
And once again, this is where the horniness bleeds into reality, where they have decided to go to an Indian restaurant they found on Yelp called Korma Sutra Sensual Indian Cuisine. They, of course, the one family arrives. As they arrive, the other family is also arriving seemingly from another entrance. I'm surprised they didn't make some kind of like weird backdoor like sex joke.
I also want to say the Italian fathers are completely baffled by the idea that you would want to eat another cuisine. They're like, Indian food? Why are we going here?
I would love to see if they're like, naan, I guess, is like a pizza crust. Let's see what kind of toppings we put on that. Like, they're trying to reverse engineer a pizza out of Indian food.
Oh, that would have been great. So, of course, both families are a little bit, both fathers, I guess, are irritated by the news. And they realize the only option at this point is to have another pizza contest. So one of the families will have to move away. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, whoever loses the contest will move away, and the dads won't compete. No. The heirs to the pizza thrones will compete.
Yeah,
because right?
They've been banned from the competition.
They've been banned for.
I see. I missed that the dads are banned.
So of course, Leo and Nikki are going to have to compete, and they get in a fight. Leo makes some weird jokes. First Nikki says, I'm a chef. I don't do pizza, which is a weird thing to say.
I mean, it would make sense if she said it in 1953.
Yeah. And then Leo, of course, is like, you did pizza last night. And we're like, whoa, dude.
No. She's talking about how he's like, I always let you win at everything. And she goes, no, you didn't let me win. I let you win or something. And she's like, oh, like you let me win last night. And they all go, oh.
Yep, and she slaps his face, and we're like, yeah, he deserved that. That was a pretty shitty thing to say.
Especially then, in front of her family. Although I wish they had done it your way, where he goes, we made pizza last night.
We made some delicious
pizza.
Sweet
pizza.
you had a heaping helping of hot sausage pizza last night.
Oh, wow.
Oh, boy.
Dan, so, I'm sorry, the movie is getting into me. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, of course, the only option is for us to have a pizza contest at the festival. The festival, I don't know if you've ever been to like the 18th Avenue Feast or the Feast of San Gennaro. It's like that.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a princess. There's a girl who's wants to go to the festival, right, Dan? She sings a song about how she she wants to go to the festival, so she has to go into the woods.
Yeah, and a ball. I can't remember the rest.
Okay. So the hosts are these two garishly dressed characters in blindingly colored suits. Mm-hmm. And there's also some bikini-clad men and women who are going to be announced as, like, what, Mr. and Mrs. Italian Festival?
I guess Mr. and Mrs. Italy Bikini. And this is after Luigi has revealed to Leo, I know I'm not Italian, but when I was thrown out of my house by my dad for being gay, the Italians accepted me, which raises even more questions about, I guess Toronto Italians are a lot more open-minded than the New Jersey Italians I grew up around. But then we know he's gay because he is leering at the Mr. Bikini. Like, they just keep cutting to him going, like whenever they show these guys.
Yeah. Yeah, his eyeballs are popping out. He's wearing sunglasses and they shatter. So before this, you know, they both our leads have their, you know, their moments where they like talk to Nona. Nona's like, "Oh, being with a man is a great." And so they're competing. They manage to make it to the final round. It's our two hero pizzas battling each other. And there's a moment where Nikki clearly has the opportunity and the motive, so she swaps sauces so that Leo makes his pizza with his family's dough and her famous sauce.
And I got to say, like, before this happened, I was joking. Like, they were, like, walking up with the pizzas, and I was joking about, like, oh, it'd be hilarious if, like, it was, like, Reese's Pieces commercial, and they, like, bumped into each other and got, like, their pizza all over each other's pizza, which made the perfect pizza. And that's kind of what happens in the movie.
It's kind of what happens in the movie.
I mean, it's more deliberate than that, but yeah.
So they make their pizzas and throw them directly into ovens that are clearly not on. Like, there is no lights. There's no way these pizza ovens are working. I mean, it's tough. Who brings a giant pizza oven out into the street?
I mean, for a street festival, all the time.
Oh, I guess you're right. I just thought the food magically appeared, or like, or maybe like a dragon breathed fire on them. But I'm thinking probably of Renaissance festivals. So of course, Leo wins the contest, and even before he can accept his trophy, Nikki has already jumped in a cab to head to the airport.
She has her luggage right next to the stage.
I would be so fucking stressed out if I'm like, yeah, so let's time this out. I'm going to pack my bags, okay? I'm going to compete in a pizza festival. I'm sure that that's going to go exactly on time. It's not going to go long. And then if I, even before the festival's done, I'll just, a festival that I guess I'm going to, it felt like she hadn't already decided she was going to lose. Like, it felt like she decided she was going to throw the contest at the last moment. So it is weird that she, like, that she baked in that extra time. So she just jumps in the cab. She's already leaving.
Wait, on top of that, Stuart, we have never seen her putting together her menu to submit, right? So is she just going to cram it on the plane on the way over? That's crazy.
Yeah, she's just going to sit in her seat on the plane and look around the plane and think of things. She's like, plain pizza. Write it down.
Jane Seymour's looking at the menu, and she's like, there's so many different dishes that are based around small packages of nuts. That's the theme you're going for?
These sort of ginger cookies.
There's a lot of biscotti-based dishes here. Or not biscotti, Biscoff. Sorry, I just said Biscoff.
So of course, we rush to the airport. Leo wants to try and win Nikki back.
Wait, guys, I want to see that movie so badly now. Where she's just raided the snack basket on the plane and is mixing it. She's like, I got to figure out how to do a fancy casual meal out of popcorners and Cheez-Its. Hold on, how do I do this?
How do I work these Terra chips into it?
She's like, flotation device. Flotation device. Pillowy. Gnocchi. Gnocchi.
She's like, for the first course, it is a single Terra chip floating in a plastic cup of Pepsi Cola. Now the salt in the chip really brings out the sugar in the soda. Yep. It's a combination of salty and sweet. Yep. And Jane Seymour's like, all right, I'll see how far this goes. What's the next course? Okay,
like,
next
I've
course.
I've got time to kill. Let's do this.
Okay. Now, next we have it's a baked item. It's made of a crust of mashed Cheez-It and Biscoff cookie, and it's served on an in-flight magazine. All right. Okay.
These are some deconstructed pretzels in a barf bag. These are deconstructed just because you crumpled them. Yes, that's what I mean. So go on, Stuart.
Okay. So
they're at the airport.
Leo realizes. The contest was fixed.
Yeah, so wait, no, we're still doing this bit. So, like, this is a duo of little salamis, because I paid extra for the snack bag, right? Where, one of them's cooked and one's not cooked. That's how it's a duo, like, right?
I heard some hummus on them.
Okay, so I'm playing two.
It's a duo of dry salami slices and a tiny packet of, like, liquidy cheese, but not fully liquid cheese. All right, okay.
Okay, so technically we all contributed to that bit. So, so I get partial credit. So right, sell it for $1 million.
Yeah, Stuart, now you own a part of it. The ASCAP will register that. Yeah, sure.
Thank you. Okay, so they rush to the airport. Nikki is going through the security line, and she is behaving like a person who has never fucking flown in her life, because she's like, oh, I can't take my keys? Okay, I guess I'll go back through. What? My watch? I guess my watch is too meddly. But bracelets? Bracelets is different than a watch. Okay, I'll go back.
She has a medal around her neck that her Nona gave her. That's, I forget what saint it is, but it's a saint that looks over wayward children. And she's looking at it like, I have to take this off too. It's like, mm-hmm. yeah, dude. Of course you do. Like, how'd you get here from London? I don't understand. You stow away in a pet carrier. What happened?
Like, she's a ghost that's trapped. Her spirit is trapped inside an amulet, and she's like, if I remove this, my body will turn into a husk. That's on you.
My head will fall off.
Oh man, I love that joke.
But that buys time for who to get to the airport.
Yeah, I think she kind of did it on purpose, right? She was like, I think the way this is going, I got to give him a little bit of time because he's riding a fucking scooter to the airport.
If it's anything like what happens to me, she did it because I was right behind her with my wife and two children, one of whom is a crying baby, and the other whom is a boy who does not want to let go of his scooter, even though I have to disassemble it to put it through the machine.
Uh-huh.
And he's just telling me how hungry he is. And she is taking up as much time as possible to keep me in that situation as long as she possibly can.
Yeah.
So I can't get to the other side where I can get my shit together and like get food for my children, because that's what happens every time I go to the airport.
Because famously, the bad travelers are not the people traveling with a bunch of kids. Famously, people are excited to see them.
Burn.
From my point of view, this is a real Rashomon we got here, Stuart. Yeah.
From my point of view, it's the Jedi that are evil.
I like the pleasing mellifluous sound of a child's shrill scream inside of a confined space with bad air pressure. Sure.
So of course, Leo gets there in time. He runs up some stairs that are placed kind of interestingly. It's weird that they would have stairs that close to the security line, because I feel like people could like jump over them and get through security like parkour style. But whatever,
it's actually very similar to the way that LAX is laid out in some of its terminals, which is weird. But you're right.
Okay.
It is weird that there seems to be a staircase that goes to the gates that just goes over the security line.
Yeah, it seems like, why isn't everyone just going over this? Maybe that just takes them to an Auntie Anne's Pretzels or something. They have those in airports, right?
Sure, why not? Okay.
So, the whole family shows up.
It's probably a Tim Hortons.
Yep, so the whole family shows up. Leo pours out his heart like so much a pizza sauce, and Nikki mulls it over. There's so much wine. There's a star-making performance from a security guard who says, girl, go to London. Don't change your plans for no man.
Yeah, she immediately became my favorite character at that point. I'm like, yeah, man, don't throw away your career just for this. You can figure something out. Like,
we're also introduced to another security agent who is played by a gay man who keeps taking selfies. It's only important because he shows up later as Luigi's date at the wedding. So eventually, she makes everyone believe, like, she goes through the security line. You're like, oh, she gave up on him. But nope, she had to get her bag. She's decided to stay. And everybody's happy, and there's a wedding, and everybody is coupled off.
Yeah, everyone's paired off like it's a Shakespeare comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the dads explain why their feud even happened in the first place.
Oh, yeah. It was an argument over which parent to name the pizza parlor over, and both of the parents are like, we don't want a fucking pizza parlor named after us. Come on.
Yeah, they don't want to be named after pizza, which is, once again, it's all tied in with communication, guys. If Nikki had told everybody that she was only going to be there briefly, they could have dealt with this, but it was, they wouldn't have had to rush to the airport.
I mean, to be fair, if their argument escalated from, I want this pizza named after my grandma, after my mom, no, I want it named after my dad, to the point where they were throwing food at each other, I think there were bigger issues underlying this argument.
Also, the flashback to them fighting at the pizza contest was pretty funny, because it turns into like an old vaudeville like routine, like they're like throwing pizza at each other, like sauce at each other, dough at each other. It's pretty funny.
I am glad that you specified old vaudeville, because if it was more of a new vaudeville act.
Vaudeville is back, guys. It's called TikTok.
Yeah. But also, I want to say, too, Jane Seymour comes over, and she is quite taken with the pizza that they've made together for the wedding, and talks to them about franchising opportunities abroad. So everyone gets what they want.
Because apparently Nikki's grandma invited Nikki's old boss to her wedding.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they'd made a connection. Like, she specified that, like, she was her best student.
Yeah.
I guess, sure, I guess. And also, she's like, so Nikki was in competition with this guy, Garth? and or Gareth, and she's like, ugh, Gareth's food went through a reviewer so fast that we had to shut down within weeks. And it's like, guys, come on, this Gareth guy, we barely met him. There's no reason to say that he's like poisoning people. Like,
yeah, don't
malign him. That seems to be also an issue maybe with like food sanitation and prep more than like his menu.
I mean, which would still be on him because he's the executive chef at the restaurant, right?
Yeah, yeah. Sure. He made a sauce out of Windex or something.
and even the Indian employees have now paired up in our
Yeah, there's a moment where Joji, our leads are dancing with their respective, their respective Indian coworkers, and then trick them into dancing with each other. And there's a moment where Joji sees Jesse in her sari, and he's like, he says, "Holy cow!" Which earlier in the movie they'd addressed that cows are sacred in India, so that's a big deal.
It.
But
it's
like,
a joke
fuck
about
you.
Go on.
And then everyone's happy, and then it's just bloop-a-palooza, right?
Yeah, there's a bunch of bloops. Well, I mean, a lot of this movie seems to have been improvised because they've got a bunch of sort of alternate takes of jokes. And
I don't know, Dan, the movie seems pretty tightly crafted.
I would say that most of the time they chose the wrong joke to put in the movie because I laughed harder at most of the bloops than
yeah,
I did.
Yeah, certainly all of Luigi's jokes where they're making a joke about him touching Hayden Christensen's butt. All of his takes were funnier than the one they put in the movie.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like this is the kind of movie where, and the, you know, the person who, people who made this movie, they've made other movies. They're not newbies. This is not a Neil Breen scenario. These
there's
are all professionals.
There's a stink of professionalism on this movie.
Yes, but I kind of wonder if there were takes where they were like, that's hilarious. We'll save that for the bloopers. Like,
oh,
that's,
yeah.
That's too funny to put in the movie. That should be in the bloopers.
Yeah, you want people laughing on the way out of the theater, you know?
Mm-hmm. Laughing, and maybe hungry, because... Did you guys really want pizza afterwards? Because I didn't.
Oh, no?
I was like, maybe I'll never eat a pizza again. Because all I could think about was how much trouble it causes people emotionally, the people who make the pizzas.
Guys, let's do final judgments, whether this is a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie you kind of like. Stuart, what do you want to say about this?
Yeah, I mean, some of the troubling stereotypes aside, I thought this was kind of a good, bad movie. I had a good time. My wife and I had a great time watching and laughing at it. And but yeah, you know, whatever. It was fun.
I watched this with Audrey, who is a great fan of dumb romantic comedies. And she was on board from the beginning. I kind of thought it was sort of generic and boring for a lot of it. And then like... I don't know, like the last 30 minutes kind of won me over for some reason. I'm not really sure what changed, whether I just had Stockholm Syndrome or whether the energy picked up. But I don't know. It exists outside the categories for me. I'd say if you're into this kind of thing, you might have fun watching it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, yeah, it's a, if you want to watch a, it does feel super generic, but that's kind of what made it a good, bad movie for me, is that there were certain points where I was like, how generic can a movie feel? And still be a movie that has characters with names. And this gets pretty close to it. If you want to see a super good, bad movie romantic comedy, I'd recommend Down to You with Freddie Prinze Jr. and Julia Stiles. But if you want to watch one where the joke is like, how little movie could they put in a movie? Like, how much could it just be the template for a romantic comedy? I'd say go with this one, because I think I found that funny about it, where it was like, what's the hook? Everybody's Italian. Okay, do we need anything else in the movie? Nah, that's pretty much enough. That's okay.
Yeah, and there's barely any conflicts. Like, they could have made way more of the sort of, like, Romeo and Juliet feuding families thing. But, like, everyone in the families except the fathers are totally cool with one another.
Well, it's so funny that, like...
Even more than that in some cases.
Yeah. Yeah, it turns out everyone else is fine. But also, like, there are times when they're having a great time, Leo and Nikki, and they really seem meant for each other. And Nikki will just be like... No, I have to leave because it's the part of the movie where we're not supposed to be together yet. So yeah. I got to go now. And it's like, oh, okay. I guess she knows she's in a movie and they're not supposed to do it until later.
And I feel like a lot of the supporting cast are at least up for it. You know, like Andrea Martin, Jane Seymour, you know, all those guys. Alyssa Milano, Danny Aiello.
So
should
we
name
all
some
agree.
More people?
All agree, good, bad movie, with Dan saying he liked it the most.
Yeah, he says it exists outside, more of a documentary.
Yeah. Hey everyone, Mujan Zulfikari here with the cast of Mission to Zix.
Hello.
Our fourth season premieres on February 19th, and for those of you who aren't familiar with the show, we decided to ask one of our characters to give you a quick recap of what's happened so far, so say hi,
C-53! Hello, how may I be of service?
C, could you tell us what's happening in the Zix Quadrant leading up to Season 4?
Certainly. The evil Nervit Bundeloy, not to be confused with the non-evil Nervit Bundeloy of no relation, murdered his fellow counselors and crowned himself Emperor of the Galaxy. With the help of myself and the rest of the crew of the Bartarian Jade, Zeman and I plucked Dexter Nott, the Emperor, and an ancient cosmic entity known as Beano into a chasm aboard the gigantic Planet Crusher Crusher, a machine built to crush planet crushers, which in turn were designed to crush planets. The resulting implosion created a vast celestial object with unknown powers. We are currently in search of our former rebel commander, Sisu Gundu, who may yet reunite our fractured galaxy. Is that sufficient?
Yeah, all clear to me. Mission to Zix, Season 4, debuts on February 19th on Maximum Fun.
Hey, I'm Jared Hill, co-host of the brand new Maximum Fun podcast, Fan Time.
And I'm Travell Anderson. I'm the other more fabulous co-host. And the reason you really should be tuning in.
I feel the nausea rising.
To be Fan Tie is to be a big fan of something, but also have some challenging or anti feelings toward it.
Kind of like Kanye.
We're all fans of Kanye. He's a musical genius, but like, you know.
He thinks slavery is a choice.
Or like the Real Housewives of Atlanta. Like, I love the drama, but do I want to see black women fighting each other on screen?
Ew. To the nah.
We're tackling all of those complex and complicated conversations about the people, places, and things that we love.
Even though they may not love us back.
Fanti, Maximum Fun, podcast.
Ow.
Guys, let's take a moment to do a word from our sponsor. Our one sponsor this week is Squarespace.
Mm-hmm.
Squarespace, you know by now, it's a service that allows you to take your cool idea and turn it into a website. You can blog or publish content, sell products and services of all kinds, and, you know, whatever your heart desires. Squarespace will do this by giving you beautiful, customizable templates created by world-class designers, with everything optimized for mobile right out of the box, a new way to buy domains and choose from over 200 extensions, free and secure hosting, and more. Hey, head to squarespace.com/flop for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use the offer code FLOP to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hey, Dan, I had an idea for a website, and I was wondering if Squarespace could help me with it.
Almost certainly.
Oh, okay, thank you. Well, that's all I had to say. Oh, but Dan is getting up and leaving, so I guess I'll talk longer.
Yeah.
So I had an idea for a website. So here's the thing. Everyone knows about Little Italies. They're the parts of big cities where a lot of people of Italian descent are, and it's like a Little Italy. But I want to find the Italiest corner of Little Italy. So I have a new website. It's called www.littleittalyfinder.com. Mm-hmm. And we're going to find Little Italy, the corner of Little Italy that's even more Italian than the rest of Little Italy. I call it Little Italy. It might be the back room of a restaurant. It might be a corner of a pork store. It might be just like the shower in an old lady's apartment. I don't know. So it's littleittalyfinder.com. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it relies really on user reports of how much Italy they find in a part of a Little Italy. And with the one that gets the most ratings, that becomes the Little Italy. So there's kind of like a Pokemon Go, also like competitive game aspect to it, because people have to make their case. Why is this the most Italian part of Little Italy? Why is this the Little Italy?
And kind of like Pokemon Go, it gets people out moving around and walking.
Oh, which is so needed these days. We spend so much of our life sitting down at work or at our computer or looking at our phones. Now we can walk around looking at our phones. Well, we kind of try. And I imagine eventually you'll have so much data that you can use your phone like a ghost meter in Ghostbusters, where you just wave it around and it picks up on the levels of Italian in Little Italy until you find Little Italy. So that's littleittalyfinder.com, your source for both finding and reporting on the most Italian parts.
No other sponsors this week. If you want to get up on the Jumbotron, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
Mm-hmm.
But let's mention our live show in, wait a minute, where is it?
Hold on, oh no, Toronto. On April 18th at 8 p.m., we're going to be in Toronto. That's right, the site of the movie Little Italy that we were just talking about.
I think the theater is in Little Italy in Toronto.
Yeah.
Nice.
Uh-oh. Guys, forget what I said. It's a great movie, and I love it, and everything about that neighborhood is great. Uh-oh, mm-hmm. We're in trouble. We're going to be at the Royal Cinema. It's part of the What the Film Festival. That's April 18th at 8 p.m. We haven't chosen the movie for it yet. It's probably going to be a lesser-known, not quite as big-budge movie as we usually do for live shows, but it'll be fun.
Possibly Canadian from the choices we've been looking at so far. I also want to say, if you go to flophousepodcast.com, there will be a link to where you buy tickets, both on the show page for this episode and under events. So it would be very hard for you not to find the link.
I mean, you're probably there already. And that's April 18th at 8 p.m. in Toronto at the Royal Cinema as part of the What the Film Festival. Go to flophousepodcast.com or flophousepodcast.com/events.
Cool.
Anything else, or should we move on to letters?
I'll let you know that by the time this episode comes out, it will be, I think, a day until the release of the first episode of iPodius. That's right. The long-awaited Elliot Kalin, John Hodgman collaborative podcast, where together we watch and talk about the 1974 British miniseries, or 1976, I can't remember, British miniseries I, Claudius, based on the novels by Robert Graves.
I thought it was about going to the bathroom.
A lot of people think that. It's pod, P-O-D, and not P-O-T-T-Y.
Oh, because you pronounce it like P-O-T-T-Y.
Sorry, iPod Eus.
Okay, thank you.
Is the name of the show. It's a 13-episode podcast miniseries, and I think it's going to come out really great. I'm excited by what I've heard of it so far, and I think you, the listener, will like it a lot. From Maximum Fun, that's right, iPod Eus, February 17th, the first episode, enters the world.
Enjoy that from Elliot Kalin and a man who once threw a shoe at Elliot Kalin.
Early reviews say that it's too hot for TV. Is that true, Elliot?
I mean, it's both too hot for TV and also has no visual component.
Okay.
Which makes it a difficult sale for TV.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into letters.
You don't think
letters.
Just watching like a blank screen would be...
Let's get into letters, and this one goes like this. Hey, Flops, I just finished the Audible version of Dune and loved it. Mm-hmm. But when trying to get my partner into it, they turned me down.
I have to assume it was read by Tom Brokaw. Chapter 1. Paul Atreides, heir to the House of Atreides, put his hand in the Gom Jabbar.
Okay, so
that's the first line of Dune, right?
Yeah, yep. when trying to get my partner into it, they turned me down. Often shuddering.
Dan, I hate to interrupt. Do you guys ever hear Tom Brokaw's?
Do you hate to interrupt?
Yes, I do. He read Moby Dick, and it went like this: Chapter one, call me Paul Atreides.
Yep.
He just loves Dune. That guy loves Dune.
I mean, there is like before Call Me Ishmael, there is that whole like forenote too, though. Did he read that or did he
no?
Just
he
start...
doesn't read that part. No,
yeah,
no.
Yeah. Okay. There was that other part where he's like a hump, like a shy hallooed.
God.
There's also Tom Brokaw reads the Bible, Genesis, chapter one. In the beginning, there was Paul Atreides.
Okay. Going back, just skipping backwards a little bit. When trying to get my partner into it, they turned me down, often shuddering at words like Quisetch Hadrach.
You pronounced it totally right.
Or Lisan Al Gaib.
I want to hear Dan McCoy read Dune now.
Say Sardukar now.
How do we know how it's pronounced? These are bullshit made-up words.
Dan,
I could
all
be pronouncing it perfectly right.
You're not, though. I think that you have to imagine the characters from Dune, as they say them, are stumbling over them, just trying to sound it out.
How do we know what the canonical fucking, like, we don't know. Frank Herbert isn't wandering around. He didn't do one of those YouTube things, like, this is how you pronounce this goddamn word.
I mean, anyway. One, we don't know that. Two, his son's alive. We could talk to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. What, you think his son's a fucking expert? We saw what Tolkien's son did later on. Anyway,
wow.
Sorry to make you pronounce all that,
Dan. When Tolkien's son put the word not at the end of the last book of The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, so do you guys have any suggestions for getting people psyched about Dune? Also, what are your expectations/anticipations for the upcoming movie from First Name Withheld Atreides?
Oh. it's probably Duke Leto.
I'll let you guys Duke Leto. I'll let you guys field this one because I read Dune and I'm like, my reaction was, this is fine. So you guys as the Dune fanatics?
Well,
we're called
Doonesberries. Say,
big Dune fans are called Doonesberries.
I would say that part of the I feel like one of the closer like I don't know it. Dune reminds me a lot of the Game of Thrones series. So if your partner is a fan of the Song of Ice and Fire books, or I guess the show, I feel like Dune was clearly an influence on George R. R. Martin. And the way I was able to convince my partner to I always knew that I wanted Charlene to read those books, but I knew there's no way she was just going to sit down and read those books. So with Song of Ice and Fire, I read them out loud to her, and it took like 5 years, and I would get a couple pages and then she would fall asleep. But but she loves them, and I got to do voices for all the characters. It was great. It also like inspired her to listen to a lot more books on tape, and now she listens to a ton of books on tape. So that's what I would suggest.
I was actually going to say something very similar, because I have two strategies here. Number one, so my wife and I, we were on a trip once, and I frequently, usually my wife and I have a book that I'm reading aloud to her in, you know, in chunks or chapters over time. And we had forgotten them when we brought with us, and I was rereading Dune at the time. So she was like, all right, fine, like, start reading that to me, thinking she would also fall asleep. But she really got into the story, because the writing in Dune, in the first book especially, is like, you know, it's wonderfully written. Like, it really pulls you into that world. So I think, like, set it up where you're away from home, you forgot any other books, that's the only book available, and read Dune. Or here's my second strategy. This may turn out to be one of those things that you like and your partner is just not that into. And that's okay. It's okay for you to not share everything with them. There's plenty of things that my wife and I share an interest in, plenty of things we don't share an interest in, and that's totally okay. So, like, I would say don't spend too much of your life trying to push this on your partner. If they don't want it, that's totally cool. My expectations for the movie, I think it's going to look beautiful, and I think it's probably not going to make that much sense plot-wise. What do you think, Stuart?
Oh, I hope it's, I mean, based on the creative team, I'm guessing it's going to be long and, like, contemplative, and there's going to be some sick-ass synths in the soundtrack.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, all I have to say about this is, I just want to second what Elliot says, you know, if you want to get someone into something, you think they might like it, say, I think you might like this. Give them the opportunity to partake in it, and if they're not interested, back off.
Yeah.
I mean, your partner's life is probably not going to be changed immeasurably by whether they read Dune or not. If it is changed immeasurably, then that partner may not be the one you ultimately want to be with. Because, like, do you suddenly want your whole life to be about Dune? I don't know about that.
This next letter is from Lawrence, last name withheld. Who writes?
Lawrence Fishburne.
Wow. Lawrence Fishburne writes, "Sup, nerds. Recently, I donated my kidney to a stranger. Right before the surgery, I watched the first half of Venom. Right after the surgery, I finished it off."
So that takes such faith, either that you are going to make it through the surgery and finally find out what happens to Venom, or that you're like, you know what, what's a movie that I'm not going to care if it ends or not in case I die during the surgery? Venom? Okay, sure, fine.
There's also a feeling of, like, sometimes when you sink your teeth into a really great story, you kind of don't want it to end, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the feeling I had in between the Peter Jackson films, Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, and Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, was so much more excitement and, like, love of life in general than I felt after Return of the King, which I was just kind of sad, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you had finished the quest?
I had finished the quest. I had reached Mount Doom on my own. I didn't need an eagle.
That's kind of how I felt when I read One Fish and Two Fish, and I saw that there were two more fish left on the cover, and I was like, I don't know, I'm having such a good time. I don't know if I want to see what those, I want to not know what those fish are. But then I tripped, and my eyes glanced down, and I saw it said red fish, blue fish, and I was like, oh, I have no more fish to look forward to.
Mm-hmm. Moving on back to the actual letter.
Okay.
A few weeks later, I wondered what the ending of Venom was like when I wasn't high on fentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to rewatch it. I made it about 10 minutes in before the enormity of what I had done hit me, and I started crying and had to turn it off. I wasn't sad exactly. I just didn't know how to process the emotion that the movie provoked in me. So I have two questions. Number one, what absolutely terrible and stupid movies have your lives given you deep, strange emotional connections to? Number two, if you transplanted your organs into the bodies of strangers, what horrible urges and preferences would your parts force on the recipients? Yours in floppiness, Lauren's last name withheld. I want to say, like, this isn't a bad movie in any way. I actually think it's a pretty good movie, if a little standard. But I watched the Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, and a lot of people criticize that movie because it's not so much about Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers is kind of a supporting character, and it's much more about the journalist talking to Mr. Rogers. But I cried through so much of that movie, and...
But you were at the Alamo Drafthouse's Onion Night.
Yes, mm-hmm. I was. No, but I watched it with Audrey, and she was like, it was fine. And I think that's because she's had to spend too much of her life dealing with, you know, emotionally stunted men. Whereas I responded to it deeply because I am an emotionally stunted man.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, okay, there's this movie about a man who's learning how to deal with his emotions, learning how to deal with them more healthily, has a lot of, like, repressed anger that he needs to let go of, and here's this man showing him a different way, like, really, like, teaching him something important, and I found it way more moving than maybe, like, you know, maybe a very simple story arguably deserves.
Yeah.
But I just found a big connection to it, because I'm like, oh, I wish a manic pixie dream Mr. Rogers would come into my life and fix me.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I would call say manic.
A calm pixie Mr. Rogers.
Like a placid pixie Mr. Rogers.
Mm-hmm. My story is not as deeply rooted in emotion, but I remember when I was in a pretty bad car accident in high school, and my already broken arm got rebroken, and I was bedridden for a little while. My mom went and rented some horror movies for me to watch because she's a good fucking mom, and she knows her son. And she rented Body Parts, starring Jeff Fahey, a story about a man who is in a horrible car accident and gets his arm torn off. So yeah, that was pretty great. And then, for a stupid movie that I have, a stupid movie that's arguably hateful and hurtful that I have a strong relationship with, is a movie that I've just watched so many times as a kid, and I'm sure it stunted me emotionally, is 16 Candles, which I feel like I had to do many, many years of deprogramming to get out of my system.
Elliot, what do you have to say?
I mean, I don't have anything as deep as either of those stories. I was just going to say that when I was a kid, my sister's favorite movie was Teen Wolf, so we watched it a lot, and so Teen Wolf reminds me of, like, my very young childhood in a way that not too many other movies do. So, and Teen Wolf is maybe the stupidest movie ever made. It's so stupid.
It's up there.
It's up there. It's incredibly dumb.
just the idea that, like, oh, we've got this werewolf story. What should we do? Oh, let's turn it into a basketball movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a basketball movie that no one is ever scared of a werewolf. The message of the movie is kind of like, hey, life's a lot better when you're a werewolf, which is a crazy message for a movie.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a very dumb movie, but I have a sweet spot in my heart for it because I spent so much time with my sister watching it when we were growing up.
And as for donating body parts, first I want to say, you know, what a great thing for you to do. Thank you on behalf of
the donor. Yeah, I really admire that.
You know, if any part of my body got transplanted into someone else, you know, probably an insatiable lust for butts, I guess.
That's right, if you donated your corneas.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd only see butts, yeah.
You guys?
Oh, man. Yeah, this is a hard one.
Yeah, sometimes I hold back the sillier question just to see what you guys will do.
The easy answer for me is, like, a hunger for Popeyes.
Yeah.
But the harder answer would be... like a sort of like depressive self-loathing that no amount of career or family success can ever fully erase. So thank you for saving the silly question, Dan.
Sure,
not giving me any time to think about it.
Yeah, that's like it's like if I transplanted my my hair onto somebody, they would be given this like sense of confidence and like a carefree attitude of power, I think.
Yeah.
Like just raw power.
Yeah. And
great hair.
And a deep need to own a jeweled Furby necklace, right?
Oh, certainly. That would be how I would win.
That's
a direct quote of the movie, right?
Let's move on to our final.
You know what? You know what? That movie, there's a version of Uncut Gems where the studio got to it and made a lot of changes. And at the end, Adam Sandler has his arms around his family and he goes, "I forgot, you guys are the real Uncut Gems."
Yeah. And instead of a Passover Seder, it's a like a Christmas dinner.
Yeah, also, yeah, they're Christian now.
Let's move on to our final segment, which is recommendations of movies that we liked that you might want to see, I don't know, in addition to this movie, if you decide to see Little Italy. But
hey, guys, it's time for us to tell about some movies, a different kind of movie than the movie we were telling about before. These are movies that we like, movies watching on a bike, movies maybe your name's Mike, they're movies that we like. Hey, movies, we love you sometimes, but sometimes we don't. And we talk about you on the Flophouse. But then there's that last 5 to 10% of the show where we talk about movies we like. That's right. They're movies we could watch all night. Oh, yeah. Black and white. Or sometimes in color, too. Maybe in 3D for you. They're movies that we like. And we're telling you to watch them tonight.
Wow.
Mixing up when the song comes in the
ends with a bang
episode. And
just
I
trying to
say,
keep you on your toes.
I don't care for it. But
so, Dan, you're a big movie freak.
Sure.
What you got? What do you got on the hot plate?
Dan, you're kind of the movie buff of the Flophouse.
I yesterday went and saw Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. You know, normally I might go for something smaller, but unfortunately this movie is not doing well at the box office, so I want to, you know, throw what tiny weight I have behind it.
Yes, Dan, we can see you lost weight.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We get it. You have a tiny weight now.
I think we were all pretty much in agreement that while Suicide Squad sucked, Margot Robbie was one of the bright points in it, and she does a really great job.
Basically, aside from all the jokes they made her say, she said them with quite a bit of vim and vigor. But
yeah, well, this is a much better version of of that character and a better movie that she's in.
She does say, Dan, talk about a killer app after a guy's head explodes.
There's nothing that dumb in this movie. I think it's a harder acting job than like it might seem at first, because she has to be like very funny. She has to have these sort of outsized cartoonish reactions to things, but she also brings a weird human grounding to it, and she's doing all those things at the same time, and she's the constant source of energy in that movie. I will say it was sort of surprising to me, like, for a movie whose title starts out with Birds of Prey, it is definitely a Harley Quinn movie with special guests, Birds of Prey.
Okay.
But it's, you know, it's fun. It's candy-colored. Ewan McGregor's very funny in it as the bad guy. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is terrific in it. I always like her. I wish there was more of her in the movie. And
how much Zazz is in it?
There's a lot of Zazz.
Cool.
Also, for a DC movie, the action is pretty comprehensible and creative, and it's all well choreographed. So,
and it's, you said it's bright, which is nice.
Yeah, it's a candy-colored movie. Directed by and written by a woman and produced by Margot Robbie, so like that's nice. I mean, if you're in the mood for a big silly action movie,
cool.
You do a lot worse. Anyone else?
Well, it's award season, so of course.
Wait,
I've been,
you see where this is going.
I've been.
I mean, especially
because
we're recording this on the day of the Academy Awards. So
we're
by the time
recording
the episode
this
comes
on
out,
the day of the
award
Academy
season will
Awards.
Be over.
So I've been catching up on movies, you know, that are going to be talked about in the, you know, the current cultural zeitgeist.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, I'm going to recommend a movie called Tammy and the T-Rex, the new R-rated cut. It's available on Shudder. This features a very young Denise Richards and a very young Paul Walker about a young teenager who gets his brain transplanted into a robot dinosaur's body. I think it's a robot. It's tough. It's tough to tell exactly what's going on.
Yeah, it's like an animatronic, I think.
Yeah, it's very gory. It's very silly. When the movie begins, you get a title card that calls the movie Tanny and the Teenage T-Rex, which is not the name of the movie that I decided to watch.
I love when that happens.
if you get a chance, it's directed by the director of Mac and Me, and it's significantly more fun than that. It's just such a goofy fucking movie.
Oh, man.
If you're looking for like a solid, good-ass, good-bad movie, I highly recommend it.
I haven't watched it yet, but I got an email from Shudder telling me that it was available.
Yeah, it's like, Dan, drop what you're doing, idiot.
I was so fucking excited when I got that email. I'm like, yes!
And you replied, yes!
And it said, no reply. Yep. The mailer
said,
demon.
Mailer. Now there's a mailer demon that's haunting you.
Yeah. What do you got, Elliot?
So I have a recommendation that comes with a correction from our last full episode. We were talking about 80s movies, and I mentioned Howard's End. Howard's End is a 1992 movie. And you know what movie I watched recently for the first time? Howard's End. That's right.
Okay.
I've never seen it before. It was on Netflix. I decided to throw it on. And it's the kind of movie that, when I was younger, I was like, ugh, I don't need to see one of these like slow costume dramas. But watching it, I was like, oh, this is a really good, entertaining movie. The movie moves at a fast clip. And it's a movie that jumps time in unexpected ways so that you kind of have to keep up with it. It's a costume drama, but there's also some funny parts. And the actors are amazing in it, and I really liked it a lot. There's one kind of, not action-y, but the closest thing the movie has to an action climax, the scene is not really put together that great. But otherwise, I thought it was really good, and I really liked it a lot. So I'm going to recommend Howard's End.
If I was going to watch it, but I didn't have a lot of time, would it be weird if I just fast forward to the end?
I mean, it would be, because you wouldn't know what was going on. And
but I just want to see what the title means.
Yeah, the Howard's End.
But you know it from the beginning. Howard's End is the name of a house. It's the story of a...
What?
It's the story of a wealthy family that owns a country house called Howard's End, and the relationship that pops up first between the mother of that family and a kind of... what they would call at the time a new woman. You know, this takes place at the beginning of the 20th century. These two sisters, played by Emma Thompson and Helena Bonham Carter, who are very, like, free-thinking and liberal, and the relationship that pops up first between Emma Thompson and the mother of that family, and then with the father of that family, played by Anthony Hopkins, and also Helena Bonham Carter's increasing entanglement with a lower-class man who she wants to help, but who increasingly does not deserve her help. Bum, bum, bum. But all the characters in it are, like, characters. There's no like, except for actually, that's not true. There's Anthony Hopkins' son in it is basically Eric Trump, but otherwise, there's no like bad guys. They're just people with different conflicting emotions.
I would like to say that a lot of the movies that these films inspired, let's call them '90s Miramax movies, were like these sort of staid costume, like middle brow things that are not so great. But the Merchant Ivory movies are all pretty good. Like,
yeah, I mean, they know there are times in this where they're working with, especially for a movie that is mostly a domestic movie. It's like there's not a lot of spaceships. You know, they're working with a wide frame in it and a big screen, and the way they use that screen is beautiful. Like the screenplay is great. The way the movie looks amazing. And not just like, oh, the costumes look pretty, but like the way they use the frame is really fantastic. And the story had me hooked.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my recommendation, Hook, starring Dustin Hoffman and Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, guys. Well, let's just end this thing, right?
And Bob Hoskins is in that too.
Yes, technically, but we don't like to talk about him in our house.
Robert Hoskins.
you mean Robert Hoskins? I don't know him well enough to call him Bob.
And Julia Roberts is in it.
Yeah, barely. She has a very small role.
Julia Roberts.
Oh, shit!
Emma Roberts' aunt. So anyway,
Oh, actually, and I want to mention, also, Howard's End is your chance to see Prunella Scales, the wife from Fawlty Towers, in a rare, much slightly more dramatic role.
Oh, nice. Okay, guys. Hey, yep. Why don't you listen to
hey what
some other Max Fun podcasts?
Please do
from our network. There's a new one out called Fanty.
Uh-huh.
It's about sort of things in pop culture that might be a little problematic and having kind of a more nuanced conversation about them than maybe one normally sees online. And I listened to some of it this morning. I didn't have enough time to listen at all, but it's very charming. The hosts are very good. And
it's about like problematic faves, yeah.
Well, I think that simplifies it a little bit. I don't know how they would like to define it. I just think, you know, if you have any interest in, you know, a smart cultural podcast, check it out.
Yeah.
And go to iTunes and review us, hopefully well. You know, don't go there to shit on us. Why do that?
Don't be like the woman who used Yelp to complain about my bar's bartenders because they wouldn't let her friend bring in an outside drink.
Yeah, don't do that. We'll let you bring in an outside drink, though, here at the Flophouse.
Yeah, anytime you want.
The Flophouse, you can bring any drink into it. So, yeah, listen to other Max Fun podcasts. Talk about us on iTunes. Tweet about us. Instagram about us. Tell people about us. Write pigeon messages about us. If you have something good about us to say, just stuff it in a bottle, throw that bottle in the ocean. Hopefully it'll reach somebody someday. Mm-hmm. Take our ashes and shoot them into space so that aliens learn about the Flophouse.
But when?
Yep.
When we're dead, I hope.
We won't be able to do the podcast after that. So now, okay. While we're alive, this show is edited by Jordan Cowling. It is produced by, Dan McCoy?
Mm-hmm. I'd say Dan and Jordan. I'd say co-producers at this point.
Co-producers Dan McCoy and Jordan Cowling. And stay tuned for more Flophouse in the future.
See ya.
Bye.
I don't know the rest of the song, so I guess I'll just repeat the thing that I said. And I was like, the force is strong with this one.
Yep. Yep. You said that like Darth Vader said about Luke Skywalker, because you're his dad.
Right. Wait, what?
Okay.
Yeah, you're Sammy's dad. I'm sorry to break this to you.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.